following program is brought to you in living color on
DailyGazette.com or wherever you get your podcast.
The Daily Gazette Company presents the Parting Shots Podcast. Now, here's your host, Daily Gazette sports editor, Ken Schott.
Thank you, Scott Giese, and welcome to the Parting Shots Podcast. Available wherever you get your podcast. Subscribe today. Thanks for joining me from the Parting Shots Podcast studio in Schenectady, New York. What a wild weekend of college basketball, women's NCAA tournament here at MVP Arena in Albany, and then followed on Tuesday by the announcement of a Siena College men's basketball hiring Jerry McNamara as its new head coach. Adam Schindler and Mike McGadden were busy down at Albany and doing a great job covering the NCAA women's tournament. We're going to talk with them about that weekend and also talk to them about the new hire at Siena men's basketball. So we're coming up. We'll have Adam Schindler and Mike McGadden talking about the NCAA women's tournament. You're listening to the Parting Shots Podcast.
In school sports, it's easy to see the wins, the moments that make headlines. But there's so much work that goes unseen for any of it to happen. My name is Phil Risen, and I'm the executive director of the National Interscholastic Athletic Administrators Association. Throughout the country, athletic administrators dedicate countless hours to making life-changing opportunities possible for student athletes through sports. Their sacrifice is fueled by the belief that every student can grow and deserves their time to shine. On behalf of the NIAAA, we want to thank every athletic administrator for your tireless dedication to providing 7.8 million students across the country a path to a better future.
This message presented by the NIAAA, the National Interscholastic Athletic Administrators Association.
Want to get all the latest news from the Daily Gazette on your phone or tablet? We have an app for that. The Daily Gazette app allows you to read all the newspaper stories and columns from our dedicated team of journalists. The app is free. You can download the app from the Apple or Google App Stores.
Hello, this is John D. Augustine, the publisher at the Daily Gazette. You're listening to the Parting Shots Podcast with Daily Gazette sports editor Ken Schott.
Welcome back to the podcast and a wonderful time in Albany with the NCAA Women's Basketball Tournament. Of course, also some local news when college basketball at Siena hiring Jerry McNamara as their new men's head basketball coach. We'll talk about that a little bit, but let's get through the look back at the NCAA Tournament Sweet 16 Elite Eight. My colleagues, Mike McGadden and Adam Schindler, were there all weekend covering, and great job, guys. And what was your impression of the weekend? We the excitement with Caitlin Clark coming in, LSU, the reputation they have, South Carolina undefeated. Just what kind of a weekend was it?
It was a ton of fun to cover, that's for sure. I wasn't leaning close enough to the microphone. That's how fun it was. When the brackets came out, it was widely concluded that Albany really lucked out with the strength of the teams that got sent here. And the undercurrent with that was that Caitlin Clark was, you know, and the Iowa Hawkeyes were going to be among them. And certainly, you know, everybody was kind of sort of praying first that they would win their first and second round games to get here, which wasn't, you know, was a little difficult for moments. And then once they did get here, everybody was just absolutely salivating over the potential for a LSU-Iowa rematch of the last year's national championship game, and that happened too. From our standpoint, they had sellout crowds every day. We got to see some great basketball. We got to see Caitlin Clark, not to sell her overall team short, because Iowa's team is just a blast to watch. You know, they try to score 90 points every time. So all in all, it was a tremendous weekend. You know, Albany put on, you know, was ready for its close-up, despite what Rebecca Lobo said.
And we'll talk about it a little bit later.
I'll bet we will. But they lucked out with the teams that they got, and they lucked out that the teams that they wanted to reach the Elite Eight games made it. So, you know, not really too many things didn't go wrong.
Yeah, there was very much this this sense of things built over the course of the of the 5 days that we were there. You got this sort of nice appetizer on Thursday. We had press conferences, but Friday, Notre Dame, Oregon State, South Carolina, Indiana were like kind of this nice kickoff. Saturday, you got Caitlin Clark playing for the first time. You got LSU playing for the first time. They kind of set the stage for their matchup. Sunday, you got South Carolina, Oregon State, and then kind of everything built up to the incredible hype that surrounded LSU Iowa on Monday night. And very few times have I been a part of a sporting event. And I could say I've been a part because Haley Van Lith of LSU did throw a pass that hit me right in the hands on press row. Have been a part of an event that had that much hype and that lived up to its hype the way that game did.
I was there Monday night for the game in the LSU-Iowa game. That's the loudest I've ever heard Times Union Center. It's incredible.
Somebody estimated that it was 70%. It was like a 70-30 split between Iowa people, and which doesn't take into account just Albany, Capital Region people that had tickets to the game. I mean, visually, you could tell clearly that it was a dominant black and gold Iowa Hawkeye crowd in there, and they're used to being really, really loud and packing gyms as they have all season and probably Caitlin Clark's entire career as far as I know, and they showed up, and that was a component that really added to it. It was just how ear-splittingly loud it was every time Iowa did something good, which was frequent.
Yeah, I mean, and you had a first half of basketball, and especially a first quarter of basketball that was as beautifully played a 10 to 20 minutes of basketball as you will ever see anywhere. I mean, those two teams offensively just looked like on a complete different level than just about anything you see.
And really the only fly in the ointment was Angel Reese flying out of bounds and crashing into the photographer row and having to leave. And she was only out for, I don't know, a minute and a half of actual game time. And, Clearly, she was compromised for a little while there, and she rolled her ankle when this happened and declined to say that it had any impact, and so who knows. It probably did. But other than that, the first half, it was tied 45-45 at halftime. It was bananas. You had a hard time keeping up with the action. It kind of reminded me when I used to cover the Fran McCaffrey-Siena games, and I would handwrite every basket and some other plays on a notebook and keep a running play-by-play myself. And I can't tell you how many times I actually literally missed seeing a basket because Siena would, off a make, would run and be down the court with Ronald Moore as a point guard and would be scoring 2 seconds later, and I'd be writing down one play and looking up and they're scoring. That the first half of that Iowa-LSU game kind of reminded me of that.
Yeah, because I was behind the LSU bench, and I saw Caitlin Clark's first three-pointer, and she's like, I watched it, it was just magnificent, just being able to see her make that shot. You see it on TV, but to be up close and personal like that, I was like, wow, she's good.
Yeah, there was this unbelievable sense with her over the two games that she played that 29 points and 15 assists on Saturday against Colorado, and there's the sense, aside from some of the most ridiculous precision passes that I have ever seen on a basketball court, that we did not get the full Caitlin Clark experience. And when she started letting fly in the third quarter and pulling up from as Ryan Rocco pointed out, and as you and I sort of went back and forth on social media, from various throughway exits, she started pulling
starting
up
from Schenectady and then moving westward.
Yeah, just incredible. There was one, and I mean there's the shot that kind of got memed on social media a little bit when she lets him fly, and Haley Van Lith just throws her hands up. What the heck am I going to do with this?
The photographer who got that shot, that's being used. In fact, somebody said, I'm using this next time my boss tells me to do something, and I have no idea how to do this assignment. It was like Haley Van Lith facing the camera, goggle-eyed, and almost like she knew which camera she was supposed to be looking at with her hands up in the air, and Caitlin Clark kind of sort of lurking in the background after having devastated Haley Van Lith one more time.
But there was one. There was one in the third quarter during her hot streak. She pulled up from the M or the A in March at the half court logo, and it didn't go down. If she had made that shot, I'm not entirely sure MVP Arena would have structurally made it.
Well, and speaking of structurally making it, she shoots as if the three-point stripe doesn't even exist, which means that the little snafu they had with the three-point arc being mismeasured out in Portland, they could have sent that one to Albany because they didn't really need any stripes measured correctly in Albany because she just jacked it wherever she felt like.
She hit a point in the third quarter where she does something that a handful of people I've ever seen in basketball do. Steph Curry, probably the most among them, is she'll be like 4 to 6 feet inside the three-point line dribbling the ball. And then seemingly she will just teleport to about 4 feet behind the three-point line to get herself an open shot and drain it. There's a confidence to make that shot and to take that shot that I want to know what it's like to be a human being that confident.
And she's like the Matrix. Like, her handle's so good. You know, and this has been going on for years, people complaining about, oh, that person's carrying, and they don't call carries anymore. Her handle's so good. Like, she's one person that basically can dribble wherever she wants to, and she doesn't look like she's carrying the ball. She's that good. Now, she said after the game, too, you mentioned that singular play, but she much prefers – shooting off the dribble than she does catch and shoot. Mm-hmm. And so that's why I was just like, okay, give it to Caitlin. Let her dribble around for a little while until she finds her comfort spot, even if that's in Schenectady County. Jack it, likelihood of it being good is pretty high, and she was 9 for 20 in the three-point in that one game.
You mentioned about the carrying. I mean, I was the LSU fans were behind me. They're on press row and they were complaining she's traveling all the time. Kim Mulkey will give the traveling signal. I was like, no, I don't think so. But speaking of Kim Mulkey, the Washington Post story broke on Saturday, last Saturday, before their game. And what was the mood like in that press conference afterwards?
She shut it down pretty quickly, yeah, which you could kind of predict. She didn't read it, by the way, but called it trash.
Yeah, there was a tension that kind of on Friday got shut down very quickly before the piece had been, because the first two questions for her were about it, and the folks in the room basically said no more questions about this. Saturday, she very much Saturday they played, and she kind of everyone would have expected that she would not have been able to read the piece, which she has said she hasn't. By then, but then, of course, she ends up going off on another piece, which when you read the two pieces, going off on the Washington Post piece that I think most people can agree largely just rehashed a lot of...
It was a profile. She called it a hit piece it was weeks before she issued her big, long statement.
Yeah, it was a profile that very much rehashed a lot of things that were more or less known.
And had been reported, and
you know, used a lot of things. Like one of the biggest sources for that profile was not an interview with Brittany Griner, but Brittany Griner's book, that described her relationship with Kim Mulkey. But then, obviously, the LA Times column really, really got her, and this one I would say rather rightfully so.
Oh, absolutely.
To a point that it forced an apology from the LA Times and the LA Times writer.
And an edit.
Yeah.
Like, they chopped a lot of it out of there.
Do you want to say what the words were?
Dirty debutantes. Yeah. That was a description that the author used for the LSU. It was like this just poorly constructed and conceived hit. And this was a hit piece, and it was like this trying to cast this good versus evil storyline between, and in this case, UCLA had nothing to do with Iowa, although I probably could have done that too. UCLA being like the good side and LSU because of all their trash talking and their kind of behavior being the bad guys. And so the concept was pretty flimsy to begin with, and then but it crossed into sort of like borderline racist overtones, casting, you know, the lily white UCLA team against predominantly black LSU Tigers. You know, you could kind of read between the lines that something was going on.
It got way too close into Don Imus territory. Not need to.
And we don't need to repeat what he said, although we certainly remember it.
Well, Angel Reese, as we're taping this on Wednesday, has announced she's declaring for the WNBA draft. The press conference Monday was highly charged because I think a question was asked about Angel's teammates, what she meant to them, and it was very emotional what they said. I mean, did Angel? Because I think Angel, she's cast on social media as a villain. Some things that she's done, but I thought the way that teammates defended her was incredible.
Yeah, there's a circle of social media that has decided to cast her as a villain, which is entirely inappropriate. She's a basketball player. She's a basketball player and a personality who, through this weekend, did nothing but conduct herself incredibly well. People don't the idea that and the idea of problems with trash talk was brought up many times. It's sports. Right. It's one of the few points that I can truly say I agree with Kim Mulkey on. They're trash talking on a basketball court. We don't have a problem when a single player in the NBA does it. Why should we have a problem when women's college basketball?
She made reference to an exhibition game between the U.S. Olympic team featuring Michael Jordan and Patrick Ewing against some NBA All-Stars, including Larry and Magic, back in 1984. And she said, the crap that came out of their mouths, I was in heaven. So this is like one of the... Shortly after sports were invented, trash talk probably. Yeah. You know, I don't know if it was like two cavemen, you know, criticizing each other's club size. Yeah. Or something.
I mean, what that game was. And is Angel Reese a trash talker? Yes. You know who just as big a trash talker?
If not more.
Caitlin Clark.
Correct. Now they clearly toned it down, and I don't know how much of it was a conscious effort to just concentrate on the game, but there was absolutely no sideshow to the Monday game at all. I mean, Caitlin Clark let her guard down one time when she made a big three with less than 5 minutes left in the game. I think they went up by 11 or so and you know, looked at specifically at the Iowa crowd up into the stands and kind of screamed, let's go, and they got loud and everything. And she, you know, grabbed her jersey, maybe pounded her chest or something like that. That was it. That was the extent of it, which compared to last year, it was a complete contrast. So that element didn't even really exist. It was just a hard-fought game. The Caitlin Clark show in the third quarter got them, you know, kind of the upper hand by double digits, and then they sort of maintained that throughout the fourth quarter. LSU never quit and was valiant all the way. Didn't play as well as they can, probably. You know, they'd probably be the first ones to admit that. Their lack of depth kind of showed up a little bit, and then ultimately the better team won. But, you know, the whole if there's any anticipation for trash talking or any kind of like circus antics or anything like that, it was just good, hard fought basketball game.
Lost in the shuffle, this was South Carolina was here, undefeated South Carolina. They rolled, they're going.
I literally just wrote 10 minutes before we started this podcast in the midst of a kind of another.
Yeah, I mean, they just sort of, it's sort of like, okay, that was the opening act for what we're seeing, but South Carolina is pretty damn good.
Yeah, they are in a season that was very much defined, that has been very much defined by star personalities in college basketball: Caitlin Clark, Angel Reese, Juju Watkins at USC, Paige Beckers at UConn. South Carolina is this team that has many, many great players, but is probably greater than the sum of its parts. I don't know if there's a single superstar. I mean, Camila Cardoso is going to be a very high WNBA draft pick in about 10 days' time. But they're a team that just 8-9 deep and everyone contributes. And Dawn Staley has them as a machine. They're exactly what they were last year. They're undefeated going into a Final Four for the second straight year. And, you know, we just had the most watched women's college basketball game in history played in Albany on Monday night. There's the potential that could get topped twice this weekend with both Iowa UConn on Friday night, and if we get Iowa and an undefeated South Carolina on next
look
Sunday,
out.
Yeah. Oh my goodness!
I brought that up with Bob Belber, the general manager of MVP Arena right after the game on Monday. I said, "Yeah, everyone's you guys who can't wait to see what the ratings are for this game tonight, but let's not forget that 36-0." South Carolina and Dawn Staley, who's a wonderful, charismatic, popular, great interview coach in person, Walked out of here and there on their way to the Final Four, and it was like, does anybody remember that? And he goes, yeah, how crazy is that? And good luck to anybody that plays them, because they're really good.
How would you say MVP Arena Albany did this weekend?
They knocked it out of the park, and I said so. Again, referring to the article that I'm currently writing, you know, off of the Belver conversation, I didn't see any glitches or anything that really turned into an issue. They had a game plan. They stuck to it. Everybody knew what their job was. And you not just talking about the arena staff. They coordinated with the county and the city and the PD and the state police and all the community people and all the escort, chauffeur services. They had to get people back and forth between hotels and things like that. So, you know, whatever Rebecca Lobo said, gets a lot of attention and sort of, it's sort of like an umpire. They're doing their job well when you don't hear about them or notice them. And you can kind of say the same thing about the arena and the city and the county, how they pulled everything off. I didn't really see any – I didn't hear about anybody having any issues or problems or anything.
Yeah, it really seemed like, we had the men's tournament here last year, and it seemed like this did run – even that ran well, this ran smoother. I think partially helped by the fact that there were no – multiple sessions, and if there's something that MVP Arena could have an issue with, it's with an event ending and an event beginning and having to get people in and out of,
right,
especially that atrium, because you can get a little bit of a bottleneck there.
I did that last year in the men's tournament. There was no
double admission for these, so everything seemed to really move, extremely smoothly. Coaches can say what they want about the hotel situation. Rebecca Lobo can say what she wants.
What made her say it?
I think it was just an unforced error. It popped in her. It was one of those where the filter in your mouth isn't working, and you think it because it's funny and it's a knee jerk answer. And I think she said what she thought and didn't consider the impact of her words.
Is Albany a modern cosmopolitan metropolis? Maybe not. For these schools that are coming from the, those highfalutin towns like Iowa City and Columbia, South Carolina, and Baton Rouge and Corvallis, I don't understand the complaint. I understand the only complaint I could possibly understand. These regionals are picked very far in advance. Could you have easily justified putting this game in a 20,000 seat NBA arena? Certainly.
And, the coaches were asked about this during the week and gave genuine, honest answers. Mulkey was one of them. I think Lisa Bluter for Iowa was the other one. Somebody asked about just the overall concept of having, two super regionals and, sending eight teams to two different sites. And both coaches sort of prefaced what they said by saying, well, I don't know how far in advance these bids go out, suggesting that, the women's game has grown so much since Albany was, secured their bid however many years ago. It was probably 4 or 5 years ago that they, that they announced that NCAA would be coming here in 24. And in the interim, the game got so big that maybe it has even outgrown Albany to some degree if they keep the format the same way. But there's nothing wrong with sold-out crowds. But, when they preface their remarks about, well, I don't know how soon these bids go out or how far in advance, they were referring to, the hotel quality and abundance and, proximity to the arena is not nearly the same as it would be in a city like Seattle, which I already mentioned is a city that Lisa Bluter brought up. But Albany is never going to be Seattle. And under the current iteration of the women's tournament, it's a perfect site. A couple years from now, who knows if it will be. Maybe the women's game will continue to grow and will outgrow places like Albany just based on logistics and hotel accommodations. They're going to give the better hotels to the more high-profile teams, which means somebody's going to get a hotel that is a lesser grade and lesser quality and maybe not as close to the arena in a city like Albany. And, I don't know that that's ever going to change.
Or maybe they go back to the format where we have four regional sites.
Well, that was brought up, too.
And certainly would not surprise me if we go to back to a four regional format. This is, I believe, only the second year they've done the super regional.
The sequence was in 21, they were all in one spot because of the pandemic, and then they went to the Super Regional in 22 sites. So it was sort of an offshoot of the pandemic, you know, format that was forced on everybody, and then they just stuck with it. And again, probably because, you know, they package these bids and they have to go out as, you know, in whatever year the 24 bids were approved, maybe it was even the pandemic year or something. They couldn't see far enough into the future.
If I remember the other sequence correctly, this Albany's bid for a regional was actually they had gotten it, I believe, for 21.
Oh, so and then they so this they was threw a,
this
a
was
bone.
A, this was a make good.
Yeah, yeah, right. Which, you know,
the same as the men was last year.
There's a lot of weird adjustments that had to be made. I know Belver, when I did a big interview with him over the wintertime, because he's going to be retiring and he hit his 30 years down there on South Pearl Street, mentioned that, you know, they really crave getting the MAC tournament, basketball tournament, at their gym here, which has done very well for years, but it's been in Atlantic City. And he said he actually conceded that because Atlantic City was supposed to have it the pandemic year and the whole thing got canceled. He was okay with it. He's like, you know what, that guy down there, he deserves to have it because they, you know, they got kind of screwed by the circumstances of the pandemic and everything. So the pandemic kind of threw a monkey wrench into a lot of the normal procedures of how bids go out and how they're accepted.
Well, again, guys, great job on that. Hopefully in a couple years we'll cut the cover some more, so we'll see what happens.
27. We'll see. But, you know, the way the women's game has been changing, you know, I think the NCAA is probably going to examine it.
Yeah. So, well, let's take a break, and we're going to talk some local college basketball with the hiring of Jerry McNamara as the Siena men's basketball coach. You're listening to the Parting Shots podcast.
If you really want to know what's going on in your community, you have to read the Daily Gazette. We don't take a side. We're right down the middle, and we're going to get to the truth. Our reporters and photographers are out in the field bringing you updates every minute with trust, accuracy, and integrity from the first page to the last page, independent, probing journalism. We're finding out what's going on in the community where nobody else is covering. It's who we are. It's what we do.
Hi, this is RPI men's hockey coach Dave Smith, and you are listening to the Parting Shots podcast with Daily Gazette associate sports editor Ken Schott.
Welcome back to the podcast. And on Tuesday, the day after the women's basketball tournament wrapped up at MVP Arena, there was a press conference down there, and Jerry McNamara is named the new head coach of Siena men's basketball. Jerry, a longtime Syracuse player, assistant coach under Jim Boeheim. Finally gets a chance to run his own team, Mike, and you were down there as well as Adam. Your take, Adam, first of all, let me ask you, because you
let's go to the Syracuse.
Let's go to Syracuse guy.
Jerry McNamara is a – Jerry and I weirdly go a long way back. So I decided to go to Syracuse University the morning of the 2003 National Championship game. That night he goes out and hits 6 3-pointers, big part of that win over Kansas. I'm there – on campus for his last 3 years, including most famously the 2006 Big East tournament and Jim Boeheim's not 10 bleeping games rant. And obviously he's a fixture of Syracuse basketball, one of the most beloved college basketball players in a single program that you'll ever find. And seemed pretty clear, especially when you see that, you know, not really a whole lot of other names ever came out in terms of a short list at Siena, that this was the guy that this program wanted. And based on his press conference, seems ready to take that leap. He's 40 years old, got 4 kids. He's been in Syracuse essentially longer than he was, longer than he ever was in Scranton, Pennsylvania, where he grew up. He was ready. This was, got the sense that he was ready to kind of fly the coop and go out on his own.
And, you know, I kind of did a wiseacre move when Siena hired Jamion Christian 6 years ago, where I showed up for the exact same, you know, press conference, you know, and I actually kept a running tally of how many times the word excitement or some form of it was used, and used that in my column. And I can't remember what the number was. It was probably like 15 or 20 or something like that. And I kind of jokingly said, oh, I guess I'm going to have to do the same thing this time. But I didn't, but I can tell you just anecdotally, I don't remember the word excitement being used once, not because there isn't excitement, but if you were keeping a scoreboard, the word win came up way more than the word excitement. And he really got passionate toward the end of his prepared comments, you know, which were about 10 minutes long, and was like, I almost was waiting for him to pound his fist on the podium. He was getting, like, really, you saw this gradual buildup, and the buildup was to the fact that I'm here for one reason, and that's to win. And there's no possible message that could resonate better with Siena fans in the wake of a 4-28 season than hearing that word as many times as possible, followed by the word immediately. He's not waiting around. He's not trying to, like, ease into this whole head coaching thing. He wants to win right away. And there's no message that could possibly have been welcomed more willingly by Siena fans than that one.
Let me ask the Syracuse grad here. Why didn't he get the job when Jim Boeheim resigned? Retired, I
should say. This seemed like, and again, there were basically, it was hit, but I would assume between him and Adrian Autry, who ended up getting the job. Adrian Autry is the senior assistant. The guy who I think the athletic department had probably groomed for that spot. There's speculation that Boeheim had kind of groomed McNamara for that eventual spot. But given that it wasn't, at least at the exact moment when Jim Boeheim decided to retire or was told you are retired now.
All semantics.
It was essentially by the end of that day, it was known that Adrian Autry was going to be taking over, and there were questions if McNamara would stay last year. I don't believe there was any like, oh, I was spurned, I'm leaving now. If there was, he would have been gone last year. I think this is the sense of he's 40 years old. He's been an assistant for a graduate assistant, then an assistant coach, then the associated coach. He's been in the coaching realm at Syracuse for 15 years. If he was ever going to become a head coach, he had to do it now. And if he was ever going to become the Syracuse head coach at this point, he probably had to leave. Yeah.
And he very graciously mentioned that he and Adrian Autry are very good friends, and he took a lot of value out of, you know, whether he felt like he was spurned or not, I don't know that. Yeah. But whether that was the case or not, he used that 1 year as the associate head coach under his friend as a valuable experience to kind of see the process of, because don't forget, Adrian Autry is a first-time head coach as well, and they won 20 games and did some pretty good things. And so he sort of had a chance to observe what a first-time head coach would do. And, you know, he said on Tuesday, I'm going to use a lot of that in this experience for me. So it was valuable to him. And, he sounds like a resourceful, observant person who's going to, you know, soak in whatever experiences and moments that he can to help him in his new role. And that was one of them.
He expects to win, you said. Problem is, a team coming off a 4-28, with three quarters of the teams in the portal, how's he going to win?
Well, when you're 4-28, do you really worry about the fact that you're not going to have three quarters of the roster that went 4-28?
He could be 5-27. That's improvement.
I mean, obviously they lost. I mean, Sean Durer-Gordon stepped into the portal the day before McNamara's press conference, which means the grand total of players on his current roster, I believe, is five. I believe it's.
I think three of them were at the press conference.
Yeah. It's Brandon Coyle, Michael Ojo. Braylon Smith, Michael Evagaro, and Mosey Clayton, who's a freshman walk-on. He did get a commitment the morning of Tuesday morning. Miles Wilmoth, 6'9" forward, transferring from Hofstra, where he redshirted last year. Previously played at Butler. He's going to be building a roster of, you know, he's going to get not somewhere between 9 and 14 players in there, because who knows how many of these freshmen opt to stay or not stay after their conversations. It's the way mid-major college basketball is.
This is right not now. Unusual
you are,
at all.
You are, most of these mid-major schools are going to be replacing, I would say at a minimum, a third to three quarters of a roster of non-graduating players every single year, because players are either going to be, if they're successful, they're going to go to a higher level where they can get better NIL. If they're not successful, or if they're not playing, they're going to go somewhere where they think they can get playing time.
Which means your approach to recruiting is substantially different now, and he's been, like, recruiting has been one of his things at Syracuse for a long time now. So he, you know, clearly has, like, a pool of people out there that you know, it reminds me of Miracle when Kurt Russell says, oh, I got to call Craig Patrick. And, you know, I'm sure he's making phone calls left and right to people that he already has established relationships with. You know, the kid from Butler and Hofstra, that didn't take long. So I'm sure, you know, we're going to kind of see this parade over the next few weeks. You know, one thing he emphasized was we get good in the summertime, which means he has to build the roster in the next 1.5 to 2 months. And I think there's just so he has so much groundwork laid. You know, maybe clearly Syracuse is recruiting different players than Siena is, but he's got a pool and has relationships with people, and it's going to be interesting to see who he brings in here.
Yeah, I was going to ask about his name. Obviously, he's out there. So, I mean, how much does that help Siena?
It doesn't hurt.
Yeah, I mean, he is a college basketball name. He also has recruiting connection. He recruits. He knows the Northeast recruiting scene, and nowadays he knows people who he recruited and didn't go to Syracuse, or people who he knows someone who knows someone. His full staff has not been announced yet. The name that's been out there most and has been confirmed by or reported by a number of sources is Ben Lee, who was on Mike Hopkins' staff at Washington. Mike Hopkins was one of Jerry McNamara's mentors at Syracuse. Ben Lee played at Union College from 2015 to 2019, 27 years old, considered, just from reading, one of the rising Division I young assistants in the country, and yet another guy who has Albany City Rocks connections, which would be big for a program that kind of did not recruit the City Rocks over the last 4 or 5 years under Carm Massarello. But this is a really interesting thing. One other thing he did not talk about or was really not asked about it at all was play style. And when you got a guy who comes from a Syracuse system for 20 years, you've got to wonder, is the 2-3 zone coming?
And which reminds me of one of my favorite Bill Raftery moments when he used to start every game call by saying, and so-and-so starts in Miniman. And he was interviewing Boeheim before a Syracuse game. And Boeheim said, I hate to do this to you, Bill, but when we start our game today, you're going to say, and Syracuse starts in a 2-3 zone. So that will be very interesting to see if, you know, how much he pulls from his Boeheim years and how much, you know, the Siena teams that coached by McNamara mirror, you know, what we're used to seeing out of Syracuse. One other thing that wasn't mentioned, at least not to my ears, was did anybody ask him if JG3 was going to be on his staff? Yeah. That's kind of like the funny Twitter thing that's out there.
I would assume that Joe, who just finished up at Clemson, will probably try a professional career either in the U.S. playing, or overseas.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Shooting now, for somebody.
Yeah.
Now, when we talked after the Carmen Massarello firing, we said how important this was for Siena to get this hiring right. Did they get it right?
I think they did. And I asked the athletic director John D'Argenio, who, by the way, has gotten a lot of heat from Siena fans for his, you know, previous four hires and how they've worked out. The only box that Jerry McNamara appears not to have checked off is the lack of head coaching experience. He's got everything you're looking for, including fan appeal. Like Siena fans really needed this one just for the pure concept of hope. And, you know, we've talked about it a little bit already when, you know, at a mid-major like Siena, it's difficult because if you hire the guy that works out terrifically, he's only going to be there 3 years and he's going to move on to bigger and better things. Or if you're stuck with somebody for like 5 or 6 years, it probably isn't working out the way exactly that you wanted it to. So I think they got this one right for all the right reasons, including fan appeal, which isn't, you know, the top of the list, but I think it's certainly something they needed to hit out of the ballpark to a certain degree. Their attendance was down over 1,000 average per game. You know, nobody wants to go see a 4-28 team, but you have to look at stuff like that. Really, the only box that he didn't check was head coaching experience, and I think you can live with that, especially when you're a mid-major like Siena.
Well, how important is it going to be for the fans to be patient next year as Jerry builds this?
Yeah, I mean, it's extremely important. And with any new coach, I think you get especially a new coach with a name value that he brings, you'll probably get a little bit of a honeymoon period. You know, I wonder how long that honeymoon period – my guess is that honeymoon period lasts exactly until the Albany Cup – And if the Albany Cup goes for Siena as it goes as it went last year, the honeymoon might be cut short a little bit. But it's a mystery. I mean, Siena completely rebuilt its team this past year. That was an almost entirely rebuilt roster from 2023 to 2023 from 2022-23 to 23-24. There was some hope early in that season that very quickly went away, and we'll have to see. You basically until October, November, you are looking at highlight videos of guys in other places and have no idea how they look together.
And it's a fascinating mystery because after last year's, I'm not sure what level of success Siena needs to hit this year to kind of get the bad taste of last season out of their mouths. But also, we already mentioned the honeymoon with Jerry McNamara. He's going to have, a pretty long leash, Albany Cup or no Albany Cup, at least with the fans. For a lot of reasons, including the fact that he doesn't have head coaching experience and they're going to want to let him get his feet under him and figure things out from that vantage point. But it is going to be fascinating to watch how the Siena men do next year, and we don't even know who's on the team yet. So.
Guys, I appreciate a few minutes talking college basketball. It's been an epic last few days here in the Capital Region. And,
a lot of stuff.
Yeah. Let's take a deep breath after this.
Yeah, we have nothing to come up to with all my steak, right?
I'm going to be on my couch. I'm going to be on my couch Friday for the Wednesday. I don't even know who's in the next fight.
Four teams. So, guys, thank you very much. All right, we're back to wrap up the podcast and have the latest winner in the Daily Gazette's auto racing contest in just a moment. You're listening to the Parting Shots podcast.
Andrew Waite. He's a dedicated journalist with a passion for research and a commitment to getting all sides of the story.
Whether it's a local issue or an upstate trend, I do the stories and interviews that shed light on what's important to you.
Stay informed. Read Andrew Waite in the Daily Gazette.
It's my job to offer commentary about what's happening in our community and what it means to our readers.
The Gazette, reporting based on accuracy and integrity.
It's who we are. It's what we do.
Hi, this is Union College women's hockey head coach Josh Skiba. You're listening to the Parting Shots podcast with Daily Gazette sports editor Ken Schott.
Back to wrap up the podcast. The Week 7 winner in the Daily Gazette's auto racing contest was Gary DeLugas of Amsterdam with 75 points. Gary wins a $50 gift card. Congratulations, Gary. The VIP winner was Scott Lusher of Capital Land GMC with 50 points. I'll announce the auto racing contest winner's name, and that winner's name will appear in Saturday's Daily Gazette. To play, go to dailygazette.com and click on the auto racing contest banner. Just because COVID-19 mandates are easing, that does not mean you should relax. Be vigilant. If you have not gotten vaccinated or received a booster shot, please do so. Do it for yourself, do it for your family, and do it for your friends. That wraps up another edition of the Parting Shots podcast. I want to thank my Gazette colleagues Adam Schinder and Mike McAdam for coming on the show. And I'm trying to line up an interview with new Siena men's basketball coach Jerry McNamara for next week's podcast. If you have questions or comments about the podcast, email them to me at Schott, that's S-C-H-O-T-T, at dailygazette.com. Follow me on X and Threads at Slapshots. The views expressed in the Parting Shots podcast are not necessarily those of the Daily Gazette Company. The Parting Shots podcast is a production of the Daily Gazette Company. I am Daily Gazette sports editor Ken Schott. Thanks for listening, and I'll catch you next time. From the Parting Shots podcast studio in Schenectady, New York, good day, good sports.